Peter B. Collins, News and Comment. It's Monday, October 31st, 2016. This podcast is dedicated to the memory of my mother, who passed away Sunday morning at the age of 93. Her name was Mary Alice Heekin Burke. She had five sons. I'm proud to be one of them. I'll talk a little more about my mom at the end of this podcast. When I left you on Friday, the news had just broken about the FBI director sending a letter to Congress, a murky, kind of mysterious missive, saying that, in a separate investigation, we came up with pertinent information related to the Hillary Clinton email investigation. And let me say from the outset that from here forward, most of the information that I'm going to discuss today is speculative because it is sourced from anonymous government leaks. James Comey hasn't said anything new. There are no official statements from the Department of Justice or the FBI. So we are working entirely on media accounts that are based on anonymous leaks. And these are the official leaks that people get away with. None of the people who fed info to the New York Times or NBC News or anybody else is going to face any repercussions like Chelsea Manning or Ed Snowden or many of the NSA and other whistleblowers who came before. Still, based on the published information, what we're told is that the pertinent info came from Anthony Weiner's laptop, what I would call the Carlos Danger computer. Anthony Weiner, the disgraced New York congressman who's been repeatedly caught sexting, most recently allegedly to an underage girl, that prompted an investigation of Anthony Weiner, and as you probably know, he is married to Huma Abedin. Huma joined the White House staff as an intern for the First Lady 20 years ago. She was a gopher. And she has risen to become Hillary Clinton's alter ego, or at least a top administrative assistant, who often stood in for Hillary, appears to have managed her email for her, and presumably that's how, allegedly, 650,000 emails that are related to state.gov, the State Department URL, have been now investigated by the FBI. And let me say from the outset that the outrage on the part of Hillary Clinton and her supporters about the timing, about the murky nature of this, I mean, it's very vague. And it does give rise to innuendo and speculation. And it was launched just 11 days before the presidential election. That is slimy. And it is sneaky. But this isn't the first time that James Comey has operated this way. It's the first time that he's crossed a line that offends the Democratic and establishment supporters of Hillary Clinton. These are the same people who are now so outraged they're calling for his resignation or for Obama to fire the FBI director. But they were praising him as this nonpartisan, courageous American back in July, when he similarly violated protocols and practices at the FBI and the Justice Department by going public to say that he would not be pursuing a further investigation or indictment of Hillary Clinton over her mishandling of emails on that private server. And in a bit, I'm going to detail you, what I consider to be the history of James Comey running a rogue agency that operates above the law, investigates itself, and clears itself on a routine basis. But I want to focus at this point on the headline that I wrote for today. Huma's hubby plus Hillary's hubris equal President Trump? And the first part is obvious. Huma's hubby, they're now estranged, Anthony Weiner, used the same laptop computer to communicate with his sexual correspondence, if you will. And we know that in one case he was either sexting or Skyping on that computer while lying in bed with the 4-year-old son that he fathered with Huma Abedi. It's tawdry. It's pretty disgusting, actually. But the real issue here is that Hillary and Huma either did or should have known about this for years. And the hubris that I cite here on the part of Secretary Clinton is that she caused the whole Democratic establishment to rally around her, to manipulate, if not rig, the primaries to displace Bernie Sanders. And the insistence is that it's Hillary Clinton's turn. She is entitled to be president of the United States. Get out of the way. Damn the torpedoes. We don't care what kind of torpedoes or depth charges may be aimed at her candidacy. The huge risk that was taken by the Clintons and supported blindly by so many Democratic leaders is, to me, the real error that should be further investigated, not criminally. But people have to ask themselves, why did they bet so much on a dangerous, risky candidate? These liabilities, at least the outlines of them, were well known in the spring when Bernie Sanders was surging and when the superdelegates closed ranks to eliminate any possibility of an alternative to Hillary Clinton. The Democratic Party leadership, I believe, is to blame for this huge mess that risks the election of Donald Trump next Tuesday. And I've been talking about this for months, and I'm not just patting myself on the back here. You may have heard me say that getting candidate Clinton over the hump, over the hurdle of Election Day, will be a very heavy lift. And it's because of all this baggage. You're not just lifting a single person over these hurdles. All that baggage comes along with it. And my other broad observation is that the Clintons are very skilled at covering up scandal. They worked very hard on this one. And it appears that the cover-up ran out just short of Election Day. And when Democrats thunder that James Comey needs to be fired, needs to be prosecuted under the Hatch Act, a toothless piece of legislation, by the way, they ignore the fact that the Democrats in the Senate did not lift a finger to oppose the confirmation of James Comey a couple of years ago, a Republican appointed by a Democratic president. Nobody batted an eye. They just rubber-stamped it, despite, and I will get to it, the long legacy of abuses of Comey as he worked his way up to being nominated as FBI director. So this is a perfect storm, if you will. And now, as I observe, the corporate media blew this story up big time on Friday with very little evidence to support it. And now they're spinning it and trying to downplay it, fearing that it will spook the independent and undecided voters who may have been leaning toward Hillary Clinton as it appeared she was going to have an easy victory over Trump. And now they are scrambling for damage control. And it's tainting some pretty interesting figures. Michael Moore was on Bill Maher's HBO show on Friday night, shamelessly misleading and disinforming the public about these issues and Hillary Clinton's culpability. Now, we're learning today that the FBI has finally snagged a warrant to look at Anthony Weiner's computer, but they can only look at Anthony Weiner's sexual communications and Hillary Clinton's emails or State Department emails that may have been downloaded by Huma Abedin. And this is another complaint that people have. Why would Jim Comey go public on Friday and acknowledge in the subsequent letter to the FBI personnel that he didn't even have a warrant yet and none of this, none of the contents of these emails has been examined? Or at least that's what they're telling us. Now, I don't understand why they didn't just write themselves a national security letter like they've done thousands and thousands of times, abusing the rights of average citizens. They have probable cause here. But at least as of today, they do have the official documents they need to now launch this investigation. And James Comey is being hammered, as I said, now very hard from the center and the left. People who are denouncing him for making this move. And as I said, I do understand that on the timing and on the vague nature of these disclosures from Comey, there are legitimate complaints to be lodged. But you have to look beyond that, in my opinion, and understand the larger frame here. Comey was hearing last week how the Republicans have already lined up 2 years' worth of investigations into a President Clinton. Benghazi, take 15 or whatever it would be. Maybe Jim Comey felt that a President Clinton being investigated by the House, it would appear that he had pulled punches or given favoritism to the Clinton campaign by sitting on this until after Election Day. One of the curious elements is we know that the FBI agents in New York picked up the Carlos Danger computer and a couple of other devices from Wiener on October the 3rd. Why did it take 3 weeks for this to trickle up to the level of the FBI director? He claims he found out about it on Thursday and penned the letter to the relevant committees on Capitol Hill for delivery the next day. And I've linked in the show file for this podcast to a blog post. I don't know this guy. It was linked to me on Facebook. But he makes some good arguments. His name is Tyler Durden. And he says, well, it looks to him like the FBI director had to go nuclear against the Department of Justice and Attorney General Loretta Lynch in order to make this move. And the New York Times confirms in its Sunday front page article, Justice Department warned FBI about timing. Fear of being seen as meddling in the election. This comes from Loretta Lynch, who was appointed only in the past year to fill out the term of Eric Holder, so he could go back to Covington and Burling and make $1 million a year. And she was plucked from the U.S. Attorney's Office in New York. We know she had that bizarre meeting with Bill Clinton in one of their jets in Phoenix, shortly before Hillary's interview with the FBI the July 4th weekend, and that continues to taint her. And so, again, this is speculation, but it could be that the Attorney General tried to block this move by the FBI director in an effort to protect the Clintons. Maybe Bill Clinton said, hey, Loretta, hold the lid on this, and we'll make sure you stay on as Attorney General when Hillary's president. And given all the back-channel communications that have been exposed from the WikiLeaks hack of John Podesta's emails, that is not a stretch, in my opinion. And Mr. Durden also writes, what appears to be unraveling is the Attorney General Loretta Lynch's effort to protect Hillary Clinton. And now in this Alfred Hitchcock movie of a presidential election, she's trying to make it look like James Comey is stabbing Hillary in the shower. That's a reference to Psycho, the Alfred Hitchcock film. That could be right. Maybe wrong. But it has some currency and traction with me. Spencer Ackerman in The Guardian reports that on Saturday, a former ethics lawyer from the George W. Bush White House. That's an oxymoron right there. The man's name is Richard Painter. He filed an official complaint against Comey with the Office of Special Counsel, the arm of the Justice Department that is supposed to enforce issues of wrongdoing either by or against federal employees. It's the same office that is supposed to protect whistleblowers and doesn't do much of anything about that. So the Hatch Act is this law that's been on the books, I think, for about 100 years, and it basically says that a federal employee is not allowed to use their power to influence an election. It also says, for example, that elected officials can't deploy their government-employed staff to work on their campaigns, things like that. So this sounds really nasty, right? But it's like getting a parking ticket. Because if Comey is found to have violated the Hatch Act, it would be up to President Obama, or if the finding occurs in the next administration, the next president, to determine what to do with the FBI director. And we have two examples that Kathleen Sebelius, who was the Health and Human Services Secretary, was found to violate the Hatch Act, and she kept her job for 2 years before she resigned. Obama didn't move to fire her. And likewise, HUD Secretary Julian Castro has been cited for Hatch Act violations, and he is still on the job. So it's a pretty toothless, meaningless effort, but it could add further pressure to the FBI director's situation. The last FBI director who was fired was Bill Sessions, fired by Bill Clinton in 1993. Now, the law says that the FBI director essentially is supposed to be above politics and therefore can only be fired for cause. We'll see how that plays out. And also in The Guardian, echoing a column that I saw in the New York Times on Sunday, the question is, how long will Hillary Clinton hold on to Huma Abedin? Will she throw her under that proverbial bus? And the history of the Clintons is mixed. Sometimes they are extremely loyal and hold on to people even when they become a huge liability to the self-interest of Bill or Hillary or both. And given the 20-year relationship, it's described as very close, and I'm happy for both of them. But for me, the biggest element that should lead to the ejection of Huma Abedin is that she was permitted by Hillary Clinton to work for the State Department while she drew a paycheck from the Clinton Foundation and while she also drew compensation from Teneo. Teneo is the company set up by Doug Band, the head of the Clinton Foundation and the Clinton Global Initiative. And so Huma Abedin was reporting to Doug Band. He was running the foundation and also the co-founder of this lobby shop called Teneo. And from Doug Band's memo leaked last week, we know that he not only hustled big money donations for the Clinton Foundation, but he hustled paid compensation for speeches and consulting work for Bill Clinton, totaling in the tens of millions of dollars. Doug Band's letter said that he has set up Bill Clinton to receive $63 million from Dow Chemical, UBS, Coca-Cola, and other corporate interests for the next 9 fricking years. We know that Huma Abedin responded to directions from Doug Band to set up appointments for donors to the Clinton Foundation with the Secretary of State while she was in office. These are deep conflicts of interest. And if the media cares to air them out over the next week, I think they could have a deadly effect on the prospects of Clinton winning this election. Now, over at The Guardian, and I've linked to his column in today's show file at the peterbcollins.com page, Trevor Tim writes, James Comey has been abusing his power for years. Now, I agree with everything that Tim wrote in this column. It's just incomplete. And as you know, if you're a regular listener here, I have been a consistent, persistent critic of the FBI, going back to COINTELPRO and J. Edgar Hoover. issues that I covered as a young buck on the radio in Chicago in the 1970s. My criticism continues. Let's quote Trevor Tim. During his stints in the Bush and Obama administration, Comey has continually taken authoritarian and factually dubious public stances, both at odds with responsible public policy and sometimes the law. The Clinton case is not an aberration. It's part of a clear pattern. Liberals were once enthralled when Obama appointed the Republican as FBI chief 3 years ago. They talked about Comey as if he was above reproach because of his role as acting attorney general under Bush when he threatened to resign over an aspect of the president's illegal warrantless wiring program. That was a defining moment for James Comey. But he quickly withdrew his threat to resign, and he accepted some papering over of his dispute with the Bush White House, and the warrantless wiretapping continued. Trevor Tim continues, why he is celebrated as anything close to the hero is baffling. During the Bush administration, Comey also aggressively defended the arrest and due process-free imprisonment of U.S. citizen Jose Padilla on U.S. soil. Since taking over at the FBI, speaking up without all or any of the facts has become a Comey specialty. He has led a high-profile 2-year fight to essentially outlaw end-to-end encryption, a vital tool that protects citizens' privacy and security. He's done it freely, admitting he doesn't know what he's talking about. And he led that whole drama last year to try to force Apple to open the iPhone from San Bernardino, and then paid some outside group, probably an Israeli professional hacker group, over $1 million to open that phone, and there was nothing interesting on it. And he has been promoting what is described as the Ferguson effect, a discredited concept that crime has increased because police are afraid to do their jobs. Now, that's pretty much where Trevor Tim leaves it. He also notes that Comey has spoken out against any relaxation of incarceration. He supports minimum mandatory sentences, saying, "I know from my experience that the mandatory minimums are an important tool in developing cooperators." And we know that that's not really factual. But I must add to the laundry list here that James Comey has continued to preside over an agency that frames up domestic terrorism suspects using paid informants and concocted evidence on a regular basis. While James Comey has been director, the FBI investigated itself over the killing of Ibrahim Todashev, reportedly a friend of the brothers Tsarnaev from Boston Marathon bombing fame. Todashev was being investigated in Florida by an FBI agent and ended up dead. And an outside investigation was blocked. The FBI whitewashed it, as it always does. And I'll just make one more reference here about the sordid recent history of the FBI. Since 9/11, when they were empowered to use these unconstitutional national security letters, which can demand information from people while at the same time imposing a gag order on any disclosure of the demands being made, the Inspector General of the Justice Department has repeatedly reported that these NSLs are widely abused by the FBI. And so I'm only shocked at the selective outrage that I'm hearing from desperate supporters of Hillary Clinton. And I want to add one more thing, and that is the claim, the smear, that Russia was responsible for the hacks that were, quote, weaponized by WikiLeaks. That is a totally unproven assertion. Yet, when James Clapper went public on October 7th and made these weasel word claims that the hacking was consistent with Russian behavior, nobody questioned that. No skeptical application was made. And it has now become treated as a fact that Russia has been trying to interfere with our elections. Harry Reid, the outgoing Senate Minority Leader, was thundering over the weekend against James Comey that he won't investigate the Russian interference in our election. Well, Harry, I think it's because there is nothing there. Every day I pause for a second and thank the people who support my work with your subscriptions to the Peter B. Collins podcast. And I want to say thanks and happy trails to a bunch of people who have recently canceled. Amy, Nick, I'll just use your first name so you're not embarrassed, Aaron, and James McSomething. And I don't know why people cancel. Sometimes maybe they run out of money. Sometimes they feel that they're not getting the benefit of listening to the podcast because they're too busy. But I have to infer that many people have canceled because they're uncomfortable with my opinions. And that in this sharply divisive year, where people are voting against candidates and not for them, that the opinions that I share with you on a daily basis here either make people uncomfortable or maybe irritate them. And maybe they express that by canceling. So I'd like you to express your support because you're obviously still listening. Come on over to peterbcollins.com and take out a subscription today. You click on the menu button, it pulls down, you click on Become a Subscriber, takes you to the sign-up page, and in a couple of minutes, you're all set. And not only do I need the cash to keep this podcast and the operation going, but I could use your affirmation during these difficult times that you value the work that I do and the analysis that I offer. My last story in today's podcast is whether or not this is going to cost Hillary Clinton the election. And I'd say that it is possible. My concern is that this issue is going to affect independent voters who will hold their noses and vote for Trump only as an exercise of rejection of Hillary Clinton. And my fear is that this puts the election close enough within what I call the margin of graft. And, oh, there's a lot of Republican efforts to manipulate this election with a wide array of voter suppression tactics. I've been talking about them for months. And next week, my fear is that millions of people who plan to show up and vote for Hillary Clinton will be denied that right. I'd love to be wrong about this. I certainly don't want to see Trump as president, and, I accept Hillary Clinton as the lesser of these evils. I will be voting for Dr. Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, when I return to California on Tuesday, November the 8th. So, as I mentioned at the outset, my mother, Mary Alice Heekin-Burke, passed away on Sunday morning at the age of 93 in the town where she was born, Cincinnati, Ohio. And I regret that I will be off the air, so to speak. I'm going to attend to family matters for the next week, and my next podcast will be on the day after the election, November the 9th. It's a little difficult to disengage here at this critical stage, but my family comes first and my life comes first, and you'll get along without me and figure all this out, I am sure. And before I wrap up, I want to honor my mother. She was quite an early feminist, a very strong and independent woman. Her five sons have all been partnered with very strong and independent-minded women. She set a great model or example for all of us. She promoted our individual interests, and in my case, I wasn't interested in sports as a child. All my other brothers were. And she recognized that and never forced me to go out for Little League or play football or indulge in other sporting activities that I wasn't in favor of or interested in. She promoted my interests in radio and media and politics, in being opinionated. And together with my dad, who required us all to try out for the debating team in high school, she helped us hone those skills of public argument and public speaking. My mom leaves an incredible legacy. She lived 93 very full years, and she did it on her own terms. She made the decision to go into hospice, and I believe that she made the decision to exit early Sunday morning. Her only regret, and she was a woman of few regrets, I'm sure, in this case, is that she didn't get an opportunity to vote in the presidential election. And she would be upset at the comments you've just heard in this podcast today, because she was determined to see a woman elected president, and Hillary was sufficient for her purposes. And on Friday at the hospice, the Cincinnati election office sent two officers out with a ballot, and they gave her every opportunity to vote. But she was on her way at that point, and they said, "You can lift your hand, you can blink your eye, you can scratch your nose, open your mouth. Any signal that you can give us that you want to vote for Hillary Clinton for president, we will record." But she was unresponsive. Thanks for joining me today for this News and Comment podcast. I know many of you extend your sympathies, your thoughts, and your prayers, and I accept them with relish. I'm Peter B. Collins. This one's for my mom. Happy trails.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you.